afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, broadcasting to you live all over the world and broadcasting on the Voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the frequency modulated band, and streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. I'm sitting in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio, and a bus just went by, and up on, instead of the destination sign, the bus said, fares required. Now, that seems a strange thing for a bus to proclaim. I know of very few buses anywhere in the world where is no fares required. And so I just mentioned that as being possibly yet another Vashon anomaly. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who are confronting and dealing with some kind of family discord, some kind of family problem, some kind of family shoal waters where maybe somebody or some buddies in the family have gone aground temporarily. And I bring this up because last Sunday was my next to last Sunday of tours at Point Robinson Lighthouse. This coming Sunday will be the last Sunday in which I do tours for the Sundays for the rest of the season. And I had several people come in, not connected to each other, but came in at different times in the day. And after we had talked about lighthouses in general and Point Robinson in particular, then the conversation moved on to other things. And I am always open to these conversations. And in three different cases, they were people that, under a little bit of careful questioning and discussion, opened up about things that were happening in their family. It reminded me that in my own family, there are a couple of soft points, and those are all being dealt with in a very professional and skillful way, and they have been confronted and are being worked. My point in all of this is to say that if any one of Captain Joe's people who are listening to me or who will listen to this broadcast when it's archived find themselves in that kind of a situation, it is far better and far easier to deal with it at the bow end of the situation between the running lights. Look aft from the bow to the bridge and see that the port and starboard red and green side lights are burning bright than it is to be all the way on the stern of a situation peering into the wake where all of the brash ice is that got broken up. And that is what I have to say about that this morning or this afternoon. The binnacle list today has one new entry, one of our skillful people here on the Voice of Vashon, Dan, who is one of the technical experts, has had a sudden enlistment into a hospital. We don't know yet what the situation is. They're doing some work. My niece Shannon continues right on the edge of beginning to pick up the oars for her final voyage. My friends, more than friends, friends of family rank, Cece, Captain O'Brien, Pammy, Lauren, all of you out there who are facing and dealing with different kinds of situations, different kinds of binnacle list problems, know as always that you remain in the palm of my hand. The reason that we do the binnacle list is that it then mobilizes, it puts into the operations order all of the intense energy that comes from all of Captain Joe's people focused on getting all of these members of the binnacle list back on full and active duty. I had a request during the week for a little bit of a further explanation of my own situation. I have tried to throttle back on that, to pull back on the turns on that, because it is not of great interest to me until I have to confront myself one of the situations. But I have to tell you that I've had a confrontation with an oral surgeon. Now, this is something that is there's not cancer connected, but it is connected to the rest of the hull girder, which we know is the captain, or the airframe, if you are a wearer of the wings of gold, or some wings, like Captain O'Brien. I have agreed yesterday, after a meeting with an oral surgeon, I have agreed to some surgery to correct all of this, and it will be my first go under a general anesthetic. And in the meantime, my experience with Mr. Foley has got to come to an end, and that probably will end in also a surgical intervention, and it also probably will be under a general anesthetic. You may well say, well, Captain Joe, my goodness, all of these things that are happening, and I say, yes, they are. But I remain of good cheer. I remain up in the captain's chair, which is what you would expect and require. I remain fully in command of all that I am still privileged to command. And my sense of equanimity about all of this is conditioned by all of you. Your love and your respect, your regard, your being a part of that somewhat loosely organized group that we all call Captain Joe's people, is one of the lighthouses ahead for me. Which brings me to my book today, and it was a real surprise. It's called A Salty Piece of Land, and it is by the most surprising author that I could think of, and that's Jimmy Buffett of Margaritaville. The front blurb, I guess that's what they're called, blurbs, says, a tangy tale, fresh, fanciful, finely imagined, very possibly Buffett's best work to date. Well, what I liked about it, and I picked it up, I found it in a dusty corner of a part of my captain's quarters that desperately needs to be roused out, cleaned, and restowed. I don't know exactly where it came from. Anyway, there it was, sitting in the back of this, of the corner of this gear locker. And I took it out, and because it has on the front of it a painting of a lighthouse, I said, well, anything that has a lighthouse in it has got to have some redeeming virtues. In fact, this book is just chock-a-block with things with which I have a direct association. Lighthouses, Fresnel lenses, not completely accurately described, but close enough for somebody who is not directly involved with Fresnel lenses. Belize, the idea that, and there is a paragraph in the book which says something like this, that one of the great satisfactions of life is being in a ship in a heavy weather, in a storm, in a typhoon, in a hurricane, that you know is not going to sink. Amen, brother, on that one. And then he talks about the mid-watch. And so I'm going to read a quick quote from Jimmy. He says, on page 35, he says, "I think darkness is the thing humans fear most, for it takes away our advantage. In the dark, we have to rely on our instincts to survive. And as a species, these feelings haven't been around the track in a while. You put all that fear onto the deck of a rolling ship in mountainous seas on a pitch black night, and you can begin to understand why it was a sailor who probably painted the image of the patron saint of lightning." Patron saint of lightning is Saint Barbara, by the way, who is also the patron saint of cannoneers, artillery. The Midwatch has special significance to all of us who chose going to sea as the way that we were going to live our working and professional lives. Mary R. died during the Midwatch. My mom died during the Midwatch. The Midwatch is the time of greatest darkness and danger for a ship at sea. I would often in my ships come up during the Midwatch and climb up into the captain's chair and listen as my ship worked her way through the Midwatch period. So I don't know how much personal experience Buffett has, but he writes as if he has considerable, and I'm going to take it that way, because I identified with more than two or three or four of the things that he talks about in this book. And so I'm recommending it to all of Captain Joe's people. Again, it's called A Salty Piece of Land. It's by Jimmy Buffett. It gets a little bit complicated. Keeping track of some of the characters is a little bit difficult, especially if you, like me, now your mind tends to wander a little bit. But I enjoyed it thoroughly. And I think that anyone who has gone to sea, anyone who has stood a midwatch, anyone who has survived the setting of the heavy weather bill will enjoy this book. My magazine today, and I'm getting to these two at the front to make sure that I get them in because they both have things that are really close to my heart. The magazine today is called Legendary Ships, and it has an article in about endurance. What a surprise that the captain would bring up endurance. And in particular, the article has the classic photograph of endurance just before she broke up and sank, just before the mast started to fall. And it shows also the classic photograph of Shackleton. And it also shows a couple of photographs that did not come from Scott Polar Research Institute, which I had never seen before. And one of them is Endurance as she's trying to work her way through the ice. We are coming up now in October of 1915 is when the crew finally abandons Endurance and sets up a camp on the ice. And I will recognize that when we get into the month of October. But if you can get hold of a copy of Legendary Ships, on the cover is the Andrea Doria. Andrea Doria was sunk in 1956 by the Swedish Stockholm. The Swedish Stockholm, under another name, is still afloat. Andrea Doria, of course, was tragically lost with many, many hands. But there's a lovely photograph of her bow on the cover of Legendary Ships. And I recommend both of these things for your nautical enjoyment and education. A couple of things that have happened during the week I'm going to comment on briefly because I don't have much time always. First of all, there is in the Northwest Passage a Dutch freighter that is aground. She's aground on a pinnacle in Franklin Strait. Franklin Strait is named for Sir John Franklin, and Sir John Franklin went missing in the 1840s with the Franklin Expedition. Parts of his ships and remnants of his expedition have been found in recent years. But when she did not return, Sir John's wife mobilized a number of expeditions to go and find him. In any case, this ship, who is named the Thamesborg, Thamesborg, she's under the Dutch flag. She carries a very light ice class, and she is adrift, or she is aground, rather, on this pinnacle in Franklin Strait. If you look at the chart of the area, you'll see that she deviated from a track that she had followed before. And it is interesting to me as to how that happened. I await with barely concealed anticipation the report that will come from the Canadian Coast Guard. One of the Canadian Coast Guard ice-strengthened ships, not an icebreaker, has been up there, and I've not been able to find any photographs of her on this pinnacle. The danger with pinnacles, of course, is that when you find one, and this one is not an uncharted pinnacle, by the way, when you find one inadvertently and unexpectedly and certainly unplanned, they punch a hole in the ship, and when you pull the ship off, then if that hole is in a tank that contains either fuel or some other noxious substance, it's going to come pouring out, and it's going to pollute the particular waters in the Northwest Passage. The Northwest Passage, of course, was the holy grail of things that people look for. Sir, Captain George Vancouver, who explored all of this part of the world in which I now live, in 1792-93, and who named many of the places, including Puget Sound and Vashon Island, was searching for the Northwest Passage. And he thought that possibly when he came into Puget Sound that was it. Of course, it is much farther to the north. And now it is a very difficult navigational challenge. There are very few aids to navigation. The charting is not good. There's not been a great deal of sophisticated charting done. But there's sufficient charting to know where that pinnacle is. And so I indeed await with barely concealed eagerness, and not eagerness. I never want a captain to suffer the indignity of being aground. But I look forward to that report because I'm really interested as to this ship and probably this captain having made that transit several times before and safely passed that pinnacle, this time managed to find it and find it with a piece of steel connected to him. So we'll see how that goes out, how that goes on. In the meantime, in other Arctic news, the ship that the Coast Guard continues to insist is an icebreaker, and I continue to insist is an ice-strengthened vessel, the Ex-Ivik, now known as the Coast Guard Cutter Storrs, WAGB-21, is up in the Arctic. She's up in the Arctic with the ship of whom I am the sea daddy, Healy. And she's also up there with the Coast Guard cutter Alex Haley. Alex Haley, of course, was a Coast Guard member and went on to produce the book. I believe it started out as a book, Roots, but I certainly know that it was a television program. In any case, Alex Haley now has a Coast Guard cutter named for him. He served in the Coast Guard as a journalist, and she is a one-of-a-kind ship. She was originally a Navy, I believe, an oceanographic research vessel. And she looks strange, but she has served us well. And so Alex Healy, and ex-IVIC, now Storrs, have been working together right along the edge of the Russian exclusive economic zone. And if you take a look at her track on the AIS track, the Automatic Information System track, you can see that they've been skirting right along the edge and they've been declaring our presence. Now, my concern about ex-IVIC, now Storrs, remains as before. That miserable flight deck is still up on the forecastle, had not yet been removed by the ship's damage control party, and no effort to put a properly qualified and certified flight deck aft, which certainly could be done, has been started. So she does not have any aircraft capability. But Healy does, and Alex Haley does, and the three of them are working together right along the Russian exclusive economic zone. I applaud our presence. It is long overdue. And in particular, do I applaud our presence with big ships with red hulls, because you cannot make any mistake as to both who they are and what they are and where they are. IVIC, ex-IVIC, now Storrs, is big. And she is tall. And she, when she gets into any kind of a beam, she is going to be a roller. And she has no flare forward. So if she gets into any kind of a, let's say, 40 or 50-foot sea head sea, she is going to be wet, and she's going to be a plunger. That doesn't mean that I lust in my black captain's heart to command her, because I do. But the fact remains that we have bought a ship which will provide that presence, but I hope that her captain will will get her out of, for what is an ice in the ice community, harm's way, if he gets into a nice situation which that ship is not designed to manage and to handle, so that wonderful crew is not put at risk. G Captain today came up with an article about aging offshore oil rigs, and in particular off the coast of California. It turns out, something I did not know, many things I do not know, but that turns out that one of the things that I did not know was that we have had oil rigs offshore for over 100 years. The first one was put in 1896, and it was off the coast of California, and now there are thousands of oil rigs all over the world that are coming up on what by any definition is their lifespan. Now, many of these are in particularly difficult waters, and so the stress on all of the vessels, the systems, the piping, these things are a maze of piping. If you take a look at the late and much lamented Ocean Ranger pictures, for example, you'll see what complicated ships these are. And in fact, they are commanded by a licensed, unlimited tonnage, any oceans, any tonnage captain. The captain is responsible for the ones that float and can move under their own power or can be towed. The ones which are anchored down firmly and permanently on the sea bottom they are commanded by the technicians that pull the oil out of the ground. But here we have thousands of these that are decades old. And so I bring all of this up now So shall we not be surprised when one of these or more of these start to fail, the couplings that connect them to the bottom fail, and we have oil coming up out, residual oil or gas coming up out of the seabed. Last week, I had occasion to do some banking, and I really like to go into a bank. I deplore this business that all of our banking can be done online or can be done with some machine in which you stand in front of it and you interrogate it and it spits out money. I like a branch. I like to go in and I like to talk to the people. So last week, I had just such an occasion. I had some money to deposit, and I needed to withdraw some cash from my working account. I bank with Chase Bank. Chase bought Washington Mutual. I was a loyal Washington Mutual customer for as long as I lived on the island until through a terrible set of circumstances, Washington Mutual folded and failed. A parenthetical insertion here is that many people who were vested in Washington Mutual stock as their retirement plan were left out. It was just a sad, sad, and tragic situation. Chase bought what was left of Washington Mutual. They bought the rights to our little branch here on the island. And because they kept all of the WAMU employees, I agreed to switch my accounts over to Chase. I had to go someplace because WAMU was wallowing in the wake along with the brash ice. So I decided that I would go with Chase. And they kept all of the employees, and they treated them very, very well. So I went into this Chase Bank. It's not my own branch. It's the one down in Tacoma. And I walked up to the counter, and there is this lovely young lady behind the counter. And she said, and my account is in the name of Captain Joseph Wubold. So she said, good morning, Captain. And she said, how is your day going today? And I said, it is going pretty well, but I am headed off for a visit with a surgeon to see what's going to happen next. Clearly, this was a young lady that was interested in the people around her and the people that came up to her. And she was absolutely lovely, and she was wearing glasses. I was reminded of the poetess Dorothy Parker. Dorothy Parker was part of the Algonquin roundtable between the two world wars that included people like Monty Woolley and Ford Madox Ford. All of those people on the New York, and they met in the Algonquin Hotel in New York City in Manhattan. And Dorothy Parker was a part of that group. And Dorothy Parker wrote a number of poems. She wrote a lot of different things. But one of the things that she wrote was just a little couplet. And the couplet goes like this. Men don't make passes at girls that wear glasses. Well, Dorothy, you got that one wrong. I'm not saying that your captain was ever in the situation of, as Dorothy put it, making passes. But I will say that I have not known any lady of any age who wore glasses, who did not carry them well. And this young lady was that. So Chase, you made a great hire with this gal. And she is one that certainly no one is going to come in and make a pass because she's wearing glasses. But I thank Chase Bank for that great, very short-lived, but that great contact that got me back into my three-pointed star and headed for that oral surgeon. with just a little bit more of a spring in my heavily weighted step. Thank you for that, Chase Bank. I see, looking at my large watch, that even though I have a couple of other things that I wanted to get to, that I did, in fact, reach everything. We're coming up on September 11th, of course, and I honor all that we lost in that terrible tragedy. We never say goodbye. This is your Captain Joe. As always, all of you remain firmly in the palm of my hand, and my hand is attached firmly to your captain, who is up in the captain's chair. And as always, I am on station and watching properly.